This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 179 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, happy inaugural weekend here in the States.
That's right. That's right. By the time, when this publishes, either the swearing-in ceremony will be just about to happen, I guess. So if you'd like to watch that on television, you could do that. If you'd like to listen to this instead, you're more than welcome.
We'll see what happens to drone policy effective tomorrow.
That's right.
But, you know, we got to give props where props due, and we will have another peaceful transition of power, hopefully.
Yes.
So then we do that well here in the United States. So, all right. Well, we got a lot to talk about. We got free UAS training offerings, UAV traffic control in Germany, FAA levies largest civil penalty for operating a UAV badly, a jet-fueled UAV endurance record, companies collaborating for agricultural operations, and a video of the week. So should we get started, Max?
Let's get started.
Well, it's a new year, and of course, what you really want to do this year is you want to improve yourself. So we've got a couple of places now that are offering UAV school. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, some real big names, I guess you could say, in the aviation training business. First, we see that King Schools has announced an unmanned aircraft knowledge course. Now, John and Martha King are pretty much synonymous with high-quality pilot training. I think, David, they might have trained more pilots than just about anybody else. I might be wrong on that, but they've certainly done a lot over the years.
Yeah, for our UAV listeners who aren't familiar with general aviation, King's have been doing VHS tapes and then DVDs and now online. They have, in fact, flown just about everything. I remember when they were on our other show, Airplane Geeks, they had just completed training on how to fly Zeppelins over San Francisco. So the Kings are amazingly wonderful people, and you know that their training will be quality and wonderful. And, of course, we also know that Embry-Riddle, one of our friends of the show, also provide quality training.
Yeah, that's right. Embry-Riddle has a course. It's called Small Unmanned Aircraft Systems, Key Concepts for New Users. And this is going to be taught with their, they call it the Massive Open Online Course, MOOC. It's that format. And it's an online course, and it's open to really an unlimited number of students worldwide. There's no limit. There's no prerequisites. It's not just a sit and listen kind of a course. They say you can expect 5 to 6 hours each week on course material. And they're covering a number of different things, small UAS, drone flight planning tools, current and future aircraft capabilities, things like that. But the course description in detail really provides a lot of really, I think, valuable training. And this particular one is free. The King's course is $99, and they say that covers everything you need to prepare for the FAA knowledge test. Their course is titled Drone Pilot Ground School and Test Prep Course. And that was jointly developed actually with the AUVSI, the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International.
So, I mean, both of these classes are really what you need to start getting, you know, you've got your drone for Christmas. You need to start really learning how to fly it and operate it safely and smartly. The Embry-Riddle class says students were to learn basic elements of safety and airspace definitions and regulations. So those individuals using the National Aerospace System understand and use best practices for reducing the risk of collisions between aircraft when operating a UAS. The popular course previously offered in 2016 has been updated, including the FAA's new 26 regulations, which is Part 107, for small UAS operators. So we recommend picking one, you know, and doing it. You want to fly smart, you want to fly safe, and this is a good way to do it. And we want to keep the optimism out there that that people are operating safely in the National Airspace System.
And the links that we'll have in the show notes, the articles for both of these, the King Schools and Embry-Riddle, are from Flying Magazine, and were both written by our friend and Airplane Geeks co-host, Rob Mark. I don't know if you caught that, David, but these both come courtesy of Rob.
I do. You know, we've worked very hard on that young boy. You know, he has now succumbed to the fact that drones are here to stay, which 5 years ago he would have said we were nuts. So we've done well with him.
Yes.
Buckling down on UAV traffic control. This is from IHLS.com, and it's an Israeli homeland security site. So let's talk about traffic control. You know, one of the things that's going to come out of this is traffic management system, managing multiple drones in the same airspace at the same time. And DFS, Deutsches Flugzeug, or Deutsches Flugzeug.
How's your German, David?
Oh, my German's so bad. It's so rusty. Okay, try it again. The German air traffic control company, DFS, is also teaching with Deutsche Telekom and Deutsche Post, the DHL group, all to develop this traffic control system for drones to integrate them into the airspace.
It's an interesting project in that it really combines the perspectives and the expertise experience of these different organizations that each bring something a little different to the project. But what they expect to do is develop a prototype for a UAS traffic management system. They also want to see if the Deutsche Telekom mobile network can be used to connect drones. The network, like all mobile networks, I guess, are designed really for ground use. And so they want to test them and see, well, how well do they work for drones at altitude? They also want to test package delivery in urban areas using autonomous aircraft. And DHL has actually done some of that in the past.
With the Parcelcopter, kind of like the name of that. And they've been using it since 2013. And so they've been doing delivery. We can't escape it. It's delivery. They also are using, besides package delivery, they want to use three other UAS test cases for this: agriculture, logistics, and firefighting. Drones could be really helpful for firefighting as long as we don't have people interfering with the actual firefighting. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, this is a great use case. I think a lot of really interesting results will come out of it. One aspect of this, though, is that I don't know to what degree the different countries and different companies that are exploring these technologies are sharing them. For nationalistic reasons, maybe they're not so open, maybe for commercial reasons. They don't want to share the benefits of their investment, both monetary and time, with others who might be competitors, for example. So I'm kind of curious to see how this plays out. You know, do we end up with these little islands of technology being developed, or do we see more collaboration, again, across companies and across countries? I'm not sure how that's going to play out, but we'll be watching for sure.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. It's like everything else. Everything sort of boils down to nationalism or industrialism, if you want to put it. So we'll have to follow that up. But let's talk about some fines being levied. We talked back in episode 117 that the FAA was considering a $1.9 million civil penalty against the aerial photography company Skypan International. Well, as of this week, the FAA released a press release saying they reached an agreement on the aircraft enforcement case, and the penalty would be $200,000, which is a far cry from $1.9 million. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, I think it was probably a negotiation here. $1.9 million is probably not something that Skypan could easily come up with. It would possibly put them out of business. But in addition to the $200,000 civil penalty, there's some other aspects to this. They being Skypan, will work with the FAA and release three public service announcements in the next 12 months, these to support the FAA's public outreach campaigns, things that encourage drone operators to learn and comply with UAS regulations. And then if Skypan violates the federal aviation regulations in the next 12 months, then there's an additional $150,000 fine. And if they fail to comply with the terms of the settlement agreement, there's another $150,000 fine. So it could add up to be quite a lot if Skypan doesn't follow through on this, but they probably will. It certainly gets Skypan some publicity. Maybe it's not all good publicity, but I don't know, David, if you're in this business, maybe any publicity is good publicity.
Well, the other thing you could say about it is if you wanted an organization that you knew that was going to be following the rules, this probably would be one of them.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. And we should mention this goes back a couple of years to Skypan doing some flights in New York City and Chicago were, according to the FAA, unauthorized. At the time, I think we reported that Skypan said that they had a 363 exemption and they thought they were doing things properly. But I guess there was a difference of opinion about that. And in the end, we have this settlement, which as of right now, I guess, represents the largest civil penalty for the violations with the UAS that we've seen so far. Hopefully we won't see other companies trying to beat this record.
No, but it is nice to see that somebody is paying for doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
We've talked about setting rules, but we also need to enforce the rules. And $1.9 billion probably was excessive, but this seems reasonable, and it sounds like everyone's satisfied with the outcome. So
yeah,
let's move on to some long flight time. This was from newatlas.com. Jet fuel-powered UAV completes record 56-hour flight with plenty left in the tank. That's a long time to be flying on jet fuel.
It is. It really is. This is from Vanilla Aircraft, a Virginia-based company. And what they've done is they've flown their VA-001 unmanned aircraft. It's a pretty good size. I guess I would call this sort of a medium-sized UAV. And this flight was conducted at the New Mexico State University's Unmanned Air Systems Flight Test Center. Now, the flight was originally planned to be a 120-hour mission, but they had to end it prematurely because of some severe weather that was forecasted, some icing and range restrictions. So they achieved this this long 56-hour flight, but they had a lot of JP-8 fuel left on board. They say for an additional 90 hours, if they'd been able to continue with the flight.
That's a long time, and it's a heavy fuel engine, which is we've talked about heavy fuel in the past. The biggest change from the Gray Eagle, which is the Army's version of the Predator, is it can use heavy fuel, which means it's not just capable of flying on jet fuel, but you can put other kind of fuel in it and it'll fly just as well. I hope they go for the 120-hour mission. It would be kind of cool to see them shatter there or go twice as long as what they originally intended. But high altitude, long endurance, HAL, we've been talking about it from day one. This is where drones need to go. And this is interesting because usually you're talking about solar power for high altitude, long endurances. And here's fuel. So next thing you know, they'll be passing gas and becoming tankers. So good things here.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
So what do you think about the next story, Max?
Agriculture. What we have here are two companies, Agrobotics and SenseFly. And Unmanned Systems Technology reports that they've announced an agricultural drone and data processing solution. So they're combining their resources. The SenseFly EBSQ is their fixed-wing agricultural model drone, and that's designed to capture, well, crop data across four multispectral bands plus RGB imagery. It can cover a lot of territory in a single flight. Again, fixed wing, and it's got the endurance.
Yeah, and we've actually talked about SenseFly before, and now they're developing a farm management information system. So what that is we're talking about big data, and we're working on getting a guest to talk about this, but using your data from your drone to incorporate it into your machinery and, you know, gathering the data is one thing. Then what do you do with it, and how do you maintain it, and how do you harvest it and mine and data mine it? So that's where Agrobotics is coming in. So it's interesting that we've got these sort of growths come out. We keep talking more and more about other things, peripherals, I guess, Max, we would call them, for the UAVs. What do you think?
Yeah, and again, it's sort of specialists. Certainly, Agrobotics has expertise in a number of different areas with UAS and agriculture. And likewise, SenseFly has lots of experience, expertise as well. But they each bring something a little bit different to the party, if you will. And by combining the two, they are hoping to offer a solution that's really superior and really fits with the agricultural market really well. This is, I think, kind of an example of something that we may be seeing more and more of in the future, and ultimately maybe some industry consolidation. Maybe companies like this, like these two, and others will understand that together as one unified company, they can offer solutions, offer services, offer products that are far superior and more comprehensive than what each can offer individually. So I think we're going to be seeing a lot of this sort of thing.
We're going to see synergies.
Yeah.
To use one of those terms that drives me nuts in the office, that we need to be synergistic and combine our thoughts. But I think, Max, you alluded to something that we've been talking about on our Slack team a lot over the last couple of since the beginning of 2017, and I think 2017 will be a big thing, which will be consolidation. We're Yes. seeing a lot of companies slowly fall away to the wayside, and the cream of the crop is coming to the top. It's going to be interesting. The next couple of months, I think, you and I are going to be talking about companies that we thought were going to go full speed ahead, and they're sort of falling to the wayside. And one giant mammoth of a company out of China will start dominating things even more than it already has. In fact,
if that's possible, right?
Well, yeah, it's kind of amazing. Yeah. But, you know, when you've had a product out for less than a year and you've canceled it because your products are better, it's kind of amazing. But I think we're going to talk a lot more about consolidation. And maybe out of the consolidations like this, we'll have like EB finding their niches, you know, not necessarily hitting everybody, but, you know, we're going towards this target market, which might not be bad. Specialization isn't always bad, but, you know, generalization is also good. So I think this is going to be one of those trends that, you know, and people can write this down. I could be wrong in December, but this will be one of those trends I think we're going to be talking about as the year goes on. Like we've talked about legal stuff in the past, that's sort of falling a little bit to the wayside. Now I think we're going to be talking more about industry and consolidation. What do you think?
Yeah, and I'm wondering, too, if this might not precipitate a reset of the forecasts for the size of this market, the size of this industry. You know, as more experience is gathered with respect to what are the offerings, what could they be, I think maybe the forecast will get a little bit sharper. And I don't know which direction they're going to go. If they contract a little bit, I wouldn't be surprised, but we'll see. It's you know, it's a game. It's fun to watch.
And contraction, then there would be another expansion. So it's, but I think the other trend maybe we should probably look forward to is, again, looking at the peripherals. You know, it's going to be the cameras, the sensors, the ground stations. I mean, we've talked so much about the hardware. Maybe now it's going to be a little bit more about the software. And of course, and there's that thing that gives Max joy every time it pops up in the news stories, which is the word fuel cell. But I think all of these kind of trends are lurking out there. It'll be fun to watch. I kind of am glad that I maybe not need my legal degree anymore for at least a while.
Yeah. Just wait. It'll come back, David. I'm sure it'll come back. All right. Hey, a video of the week.
Yes. And this is a series of videos. You were nice enough. It's on AirViews.
AirViews.
AirViews. Oh, okay. Well, I didn't see the umlaut.
It's
sorry.
Got that little thing over, right? Yeah, over the
umlaut. And AirViews is four of the top FPV pilots flying around gorgeous backdrops. So this is a really neat set of videos, Max.
Yeah, drone tripping. It's a series. AirViews is kind of interesting in that they have not only user-generated videos, but they also have some original programming. They were started back in 2015. And
way back in the day when we didn't even have regulations.
They wanted to be the go-to video sharing platform for the drone community. And so they have all this content. You can really spend a lot of time at AirViews looking through the videos. But one of the original programming series is this thing called Drone Trippin'. And as David said, it's got four FPV pilots, and you know they're flying all over the place. They're going through abandoned structures. They're racing through locations that are just spectacular. It is a new series. I think it started just last month in December 2016, but there are a number of episodes out there. So we'll have a link in the show notes to Drone Trippin' on AirViews, and we'll make that series the video of the week.
Well, and I guess we've got one more thing we'd like to say, or I'd like to say. We got an email from Mark, who runs rcjudge.com, and he picked the best drone websites and podcasts, and he chose us as one of the best drone podcasts. and was very complimentary on his little write-up for us. And I was pleasantly surprised. It was a nice thing. But again, a lot of really good content. You go, we'll put a link in the show notes. Go check out his website. You can see there's a lot. I mean, besides podcasts, there's a lot of good websites out there. It's amazing how much stuff that's out there, and not a lot of duplication. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, there really are a lot out there. And we have the badge that he created just sort of for this purpose on our website. So if you scroll down far enough, you can find that, and it'll take you straight to the list of the best websites, podcasts, and all that. So yeah, I think we're sort of humbled a little bit by that. And yeah, his description of our show was really very, very complimentary, very nice. All right, well, with that,
which just proves he doesn't really listen that often.
No, don't say that. Oh, you're terrible. So with that, we'll bring this episode to a close. You've been listening to episode 179 of the UAV Digest. As always, you can find us at theuavdigest.com. If you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode and for the links to the news stories that we talked about, the companies, all the things that come from this episode, you can visit theuavdigest.com/179.
And of course, we are all over the social media spectrum. You can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/theuavdigest. We'd love for you to become part of our Slack listener team, where we get all sorts of discussions going. And you can do that by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. Or you can go to the website and go to the top page at theuavdigest.com/team. And we'd love for it. It's 2017. We need some feedback, folks. So if you listen on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play, go and leave a quick note so people can find us. And with that, you can always get some swag at our Cafe Press store or become a patron at patreon.com. And of course, we'd like to thank our sponsors for all they do for us. And we're looking forward to a really good 2017. So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Philly.
In Max in Studio 420 in Gettysburg.
Thanks for listening.